everyone, and thank you for joining us on another episode of Lit Publishing's podcast, Lit Radio. My name is Miro, and as always, I will be your host for today's show. With me today are the authors of Beyond Default, David Trafford and Peter Bogus. How are you today, guys?
Very well, thank you, Miro.
Very well, thank you, Miro.
It's great to have you here in the podcast, and thank you very much for taking the time to join us. And of course, Peter is joining us through the power of the internet today. So we're very happy that you've found the time. And of course, for those listening, both David and Peter are experienced management consultants and founders of Fermissio, a leading strategy consultancy. Today, we are here to talk about Beyond Default, their book. And before we get into kind of the meat and the themes and ideas of the book, guys, I would really like to ask you, what actually inspired you to start writing and become authors?
Thank you. And first of all, thank you for inviting us to do this podcast. Peter and I never intended to actually to write a book. We've been working together for over 25 years. And during that period of time, we've written many articles and research reports and always valued the importance of thought leadership in our consulting work. It was only when we were approached by Lit, we'd actually seen some of our articles on our website, that we thought, you know, this may be a good idea to try and bring all these disparate ideas into a collective whole in the form of a book. So we set to writing it, and here we are now.
Great. And as we're on the book, and what really sticks out for me is actually the title, which is very interesting, Beyond Default. Can you perhaps tell us what was the idea when you came up with it?
So the idea behind this, Miro, was that the realization David and I had some time ago that all organizations, whether they're multinational corporations, family businesses, not-for-profit enterprises, countries, and even societies, are on a trajectory to what we call their default future, which is the place they will end up if they take no action other than that currently planned. And we believe it's the fundamental role and accountability of leaders of organizations to confront that default future for which they are accountable. And if they consider it to be unacceptable, then they need to take action as leaders to put their organization onto a different trajectory to an improved future.
And that's a great concept, and I would like to focus on that because there are a lot of challenges when it comes to transformation of that angle. And perhaps what I would like to really ask is, what are the main challenges when it comes to the concept of the default future, and how can leaders actually begin to tackle them?
Well, I think the first and fundamental challenge is to accept that your organization is actually on a trajectory. It's on a path. It's heading towards what Peter calls the default future. And then maybe the next challenge is for leaders to recognize that they have less control over that trajectory, less control over their destiny that trajectory will bring than they would like or they have. And now, if they accept that, then I think the next challenge really is to understand what we call the forces, the exogenous forces that are creating the context in which they operate, right? And these exogenous forces are continually changing. So the context within which they operate are continually changing. So those forces that created a context that enabled them to be successful in the past could be the very same forces that are changing the context which will make them less successful future. So their trajectory could change without them actually doing anything because their context changed. And in the book, we talk about Blockbuster, which is an excellent example, and more recently, Nokia mobile phones as well. So I think it's important that organizations understand what those exogenous forces are. And by exogenous, we simply mean they originate from outside. They are external forces. So it's things like regulation. It's like demographics. It's about globalization. It's about climate change. It's the internet. It's technology. All these things that you cannot control. You can respond to, but you cannot control them. And it's important you understand what they are and how those are influencing the context in which you operate. The second set of forces are what we call endogenous forces. And these endogenous forces originate from within the organization. In effect, they are the result of past management decisions and actions. So like structure, like governance, like supplier relationships, like technology, installed technology base, culture, the unwritten rules of the way things operate, are a set of endogenous forces that anchor you to your current trajectory. And probably the most powerful of these endogenous forces are the organizational capabilities that the organization has built up over time. So imagine organizational capabilities being like muscles of the organization. And as you know, the more that you use the muscles, the more powerful they become. In fact, they become so powerful you don't know you've got them, and they become organizational habits. So you've got these two forces. You've got the exogenous forces that are changing your context, and you've got the endogenous forces that are anchoring you on your current trajectory. And unless you understand the influence of these two set of forces, we believe you can't really make informed choices as to what you need to do to successfully change the trajectory of your organization.
Right, that's some very fascinating stuff there, and I especially love the analogy of the muscles. I mean, to anyone that does like to work out and get a bit in shape, I think most of the time you don't actually realize that you're making a lot of progress until somebody points it out, and then it feels pretty good. But let's move on, David, and that's a lot of fascinating stuff there. And I would like to focus on the organization part of our conversation, because the core traits of successful organizations is that they're able to change and shape their future, as you've mentioned, by using these forces. What are the key factors behind this? And as you perhaps have given us already two examples of organizations that have done this, how do they do it? How do they manage to put all of this together and then succeed?
Well, let me respond to that, Miro. So in the book, we talk about many examples of organizations. And David cited Blockbuster and more recently Nokia, but there are many other examples in the book of organizations who failed to transform or shift their trajectory when the context in which they operated changed fundamentally. And they failed to respond fast enough or successfully enough to put them on a new trajectory. And one of the examples we use in the book of an organization we believe is beginning to shift its trajectory successfully is that of GE, General Electric, which under its former chief executive, Jeff Immelt, in 2015, began to seriously confront the default future of GE, which historically had been very successful as an industrial conglomerate. And Jeff Immelt decided the future for GE was an unacceptable one, and they needed to shift trajectory to a radically different one, which was based on the industrial internet, the Internet of Things, and began to build a platform to connect customers, partners, suppliers, and GE onto that platform to change the trajectory of GE in quite fundamental ways. And this was a non-trivial shift of direction, because in the course of doing that, GE divested itself of some businesses which had made it very successful in the past. Financial services, for example, where it was once very dominant, domestic appliances, which it sold to the Chinese, in order to commit itself to this new trajectory. So we think one of the traits, first of all, is confronting that default future and then figuring out what the range of opportunities is and developing a different position for the future. Now, time will tell whether that shift of trajectory will be successful for GE. All sorts of things have happened more recently to GE, but that was the new trajectory on which Jeff Immelt placed GE for the future. And in doing so, as David previously indicated, Jeff Immelt recognized that he needed some quite different organizational capabilities, such as data analytics, software engineering, but also that existing organizational capabilities, such as relationship management, sales, and contract management, also needed to shift in some quite radically different ways for them to succeed.
Right, and that's some very interesting stuff, guys. And there's something there that you both have touched upon, and I really want to focus on it. And that's technology, and when does it come in, and what part does it play? Because when it comes to topics such as big data, when it comes to innovation within the tech industry, it's moving so fast, it's moving so rapidly that, you know, every 5 years you can't even tell it apart from something that's already existing. Now, we've touched upon this, but can you define for us what role does technology and data play when it comes to defining and then shaping the company's default future and, in turn, its future potential to change?
That's a very, very good point and a very important point, because technology and what technology will enable you to do with data now is both an exogenous force that's shaping and changing the context of organization. But it's also an endogenous force as well. It's anchoring organizations to their current trajectory. So if we just pick up on the example that Peter gave, which is GE and their focus on the industrial internet, they would not have been able to pursue that trajectory without the developments of technology. Of course, with the internet, and also in terms of data analytics and so on. It enabled them to connect their machines to an analytic platform that analyzes the performance of those machines, whether it be a wind turbine or whether it be a jet engine or whether it be a locomotive, and then tune the performance of that machine so that not only the customer, the user of that machine, got better performance, but also GE got monetary benefit from the improvement of that performance. Now, they would just not have been able to do that 10 years ago, 20 years ago, even though they were monitoring data of those machines during that period of time. So technology, digital technology with the internet, is an excellent example of an exogenous force that's changing the context of the organization. And the way we describe this is it's opening up the trajectory of strategic opportunity. So it's enabling them to do things now that they couldn't do in the past. And what's more, with the likes of blockchain, it will enable them to do things in the future that they can't do now. So it's very important that you understand these exogenous forces, and technology is a very good example of that. Now, the flip side of that is that technology, particularly legacy technology, in the installed IT landscape that exists in many, many organizations, is an endogenous force. It's an internal force. It's a result of past management decisions in terms of what their technology base would be that anchors them to their current trajectory. So, for example, there are many, many organizations, particularly financial service companies that are very dependent upon IT, would love to be able to re-platform, would love to be able to get rid of all these legacy applications that are strung together in a very, very complex way that makes upgrading them very risky. And we've had examples in recent years where banks have actually gone down and people have not been able to withdraw money from their accounts, or companies have not been able to pay them. These are very, very, very complex installed bases. So CIOs are very wary in terms of what changes they will make to them. And whilst every organization wants to become more digital and give their customers a compelling digital experience, many are simply not able to because of a legacy technology which is anchoring them to the trajectory that they're currently on. So that's a very good example of it both being an exogenous force that's changing the context and with it the trajectory of strategic opportunity, but equally an endogenous force that's keeping it on an organization on its current trajectory.
Yeah, and that's fascinating stuff, because I believe that something like the example you gave us when it comes to the legacy systems, it's also a double-edged sword when it comes to other factors such as recruitment. You know, getting someone to look after these things is not cheap and it is not easy. But at the same time, those coming into the sectors would like to learn new technology and new ways of developing these systems, but they have to go back and learn the older ones. And It's very fascinating there, because what really sticks out for me also is perhaps a bit of a follow-up question to that, guys. And that's also the idea of automation, because I think that is absolutely a part of developing IT and technology. And as you see, a lot of legacy ways of doing business perhaps are very stuck in their ways. Do you think that automation is an issue, or that will be an issue, or is it something that should be fully embraced in order to change the trajectory of a company?
Well, I'll answer this and Peter can add to it. But if you go back to the Industrial Revolution, when automation really started, everybody was concerned about people losing their jobs and so on and so forth. And there was a shift. There's no question about it. There was a shift in work. There's a shift in demography and so on and so forth. So I think what we're doing now, we're just coming to the next wave of that, the next, if you like, the next Industrial Revolution, where in the past, manual things were being automated. Now, database operations and database tasks were going to be operated, and then auto decisioning and so on and so forth. So like every transition, there will be winners and losers in that, and people will have to develop new skills to be able to find new opportunities, because those procedural jobs, I'm convinced, will disappear. But I don't think it's a bad thing. I think it's something we need to embrace. I think the only question is the way which we embrace it. And it comes back to the whole thesis of our book, that if organizations don't understand these forces that are creating these opportunities and embrace them in an appropriate way and do them at an appropriate time, they will be behind the curve, and then they'll be in catch-up mode. And when an organization is in catch-up mode, it's usually in panic mode, and then it makes inappropriate decisions to the detriment of the people in the stakeholders. So I think that's why it's very important. And we don't need to predict the future, by the way. I mean, we're not saying you need to predict the future, but what we do believe, the future's out there, it's not evenly distributed. So you need to understand what these forces are and how it might shape the future, and then you can make informed choices in terms of the way you should be responding.
Great. And going on, I suppose I would like to really sort of wrap all of the information and all the different themes that we've come across and discussed, guys. And perhaps for our audience as well, can you give our listeners maybe two or three tips on how they can actually start to begin this transformation and how they can shape their strategy for a better future?
Well, Miro, it's quite a challenge to try to distill some 300 pages of well-researched examples and intellectual capital into three tips to take away. But let's give it a go. And some of this will echo what David was saying earlier. I think if you look at leaders who are accountable for the trajectory of the organization, which is what we mean by strategy and changing that trajectory, the first thing is for them to really understand, be cognizant of, and understand the influence and power of those exogenous and endogenous forces, which both open up and close down opportunities, and which can anchor them to their current trajectory. And what we found in our experience and in our research is that leaders typically underestimate the strength and the influence, the impact of both of those sets of forces. And that's why most strategies fail. I think the second is, once you've figured out what your trajectory should be, what your strategic intent should be, we believe if that is a transformational change as opposed to an incremental change, then that shift should be operationalized rather than implemented. Implementation is fine for things that have very well-defined outcomes. The problem, the challenge, with transformational changes, significant shifts of trajectory, is that you can't predict the outcomes with great certainty. You have a direction of travel, but you cannot be certain of the steps along the way. You need to be agile, you need to be nimble, you need to be flexible. And operationalizing brings with it its own challenges of engaging the entire organization, both intellectually, emotionally, and physically, in that pulling of the organization into the future. And thirdly, and this is where we end the book, it all starts with collective leadership, because without collective leadership, there will be no collective strategy. Without a collective strategy, an organization is unlikely to succeed in shifting its trajectory. And by collective strategy, what we mean is not the sum of the parts. Collective strategy is rarely the sum of the individual business unit or functional strategies. It's more at the enterprise level. It's like GE. It's transformational and requires tough choices to be made, tough decisions to be taken to divest large businesses which have made you successful in the past. And those are non-trivial decisions.
Great. Well, thank you very much. It's been a great insight there. And of course, for our listeners, there's a lot to think about and a lot to perhaps discuss. And maybe you can tell us your own takeaway from this podcast and let us know on social media. But I would like to close off, guys, with the question I ask any guest here on the podcast. And it goes out to both of you, so there's no way to get around this one. And that's, what are you currently reading?
Well, the book that I've just finished reading, actually, I've not decided what I'm going to read next, but the one I've just finished reading is by Eve Doss and Keely Wilson on Nokia. It's called Ringtone, Exploring the Rise and Fall of Nokia in Mobile Phones. Now, my only regret is I would have loved to have read this a year ago when we were writing the book, because we do mention Nokia in the book, but we didn't have the information to go into it in any depth. And when I was reading the book, what resonated for me was that the framework that we developed around the idea of exogenous and endogenous forces really rang true for Nokia. I mean, it identified, it didn't use these terms, these are our terms, exogenous forces, but it identified the exogenous forces that enabled Nokia to grow at a phenomenal rate. I mean, at its height, it was selling 300,000 mobile phones a day. Right? But those endogenous forces that, or the organizational capabilities that they developed during that period of time, prevented it shifting its trajectory when its context changed with the internet and the advent of software platforms on mobile phones. And the idea that a mobile smartphone is a connection to the internet. They were just not able to change their trajectory fast enough because the organizational capabilities and the mindset that they built up during their period of success just anchored them to their existing trajectory. So I loved it when I was reading the book and I thought, yes, this rings well. This is another example of the framework that Peter and I have developed being relevant to an organization that has risen and fallen.
Great. And of course, for our listeners, we'll be putting links in the description below so you can go and you can find out more about the book as well. And Nokia, and more of a personal shout out, is the 3310. It's probably my favorite phone of all time. So this is a shout out to Snake as well. Great piece of software. But Peter, what about yourself?
I'm reading something quite different, but it's quite relevant and pertinent to our book as well. It's a new book published by John Knights called Leading Beyond the Ego, How to Become a Transpersonal Leader. And John Knights has been researching this topic for probably 10 years now. And his latest book develops that thinking further and includes what I would call a maturity model of five levels through which leaders need to evolve and develop in order to become very successful individual leaders in a new non-hierarchical, non-autocratic way. And I think John sets out that argument very well. What I like about his ideas is that they complement David's ideas and my ideas about the development of individual leaders, but then the development of collective leadership as a group, as a leadership team to take the organization forward. And whilst John focuses very strongly on the development of individual leadership capability, I think that is relevant to and pertinent to what Dave and I would argue is the development of collective leadership through things like experiential learning journeys and action learning and transformative programs and projects. So I recommend that to anyone. Leading Beyond the Ego.
Great, there you have it. And of course, there will be a link in the description where you can go and find out more about that book as well. But with that, I would like to thank you very much for today for joining us, David and Peter. It's been a pleasure to have you on the podcast.
Thank you.
You're very welcome.
And of course, for those listening, if you enjoyed our conversation today and you would like to know more about Beyond Default, there will be links in the description below where you can go and you can read more about the book and, of course, purchase links and as well social media channels for you so you can get in touch with us and perhaps David and Peter as well. Tell us what you think about the podcast and we will look forward to hearing from you. I would like to thank you very much for joining us today on this week's episode of Lit Radio. You can find us on our social media channels at Lit Radio, and we look forward to seeing you next week.